This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
I concede, and therefore I will not sign the 2024 finance bill, and it shall subsequently be withdrawn.
That was Kenyan President William Ruto announcing that the contentious finance bill that sparked deadly riots yesterday is being withdrawn. Details coming up. Also, World Health Organization member states are negotiating an agreement to strengthen pandemic prevention. And the first debate of the 2024 U.S. presidential election takes place tomorrow. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Today, Kenyan President William Ruto scrapped the contentious finance bill, which has brought thousands of protesters into the streets yesterday. Protesters in Nairobi yesterday broke into the parliament complex and set part of it on fire.
I'm listening keenly to the people of Kenya who have said loudly that they want nothing to do with this finance bill 2024. I concede, and therefore I will not sign the 2024 finance bill, and it shall subsequently be withdrawn, and I have agreed with these members that that becomes our collective position.
Police battled the demonstrators, firing bullets and tear gas, resulting in at least 12 deaths. In a speech today broadcast live on television, Ruto said the bill was intended to address key issues, including expanding education and health care and supporting farmers. But it also included several unpopular new taxes on bread, vehicles, and imported goods intended to cut the nation's hefty debt burden. Ruto also said he would begin efforts to talk with the younger adults who led the protests and also with stakeholders.
Accordingly, there is need for us as a nation to pick up from here and go into the future. And I am therefore proposing that because we have gotten rid of the Finance Bill 2024, it is necessary for us to have a conversation as a nation going forward. How do we manage the affairs of the country together? How do we manage our debt situation together? How do we work on the budget with the deficits that now exist together?
The president said he would impose new austerity measures on the presidency and executive branch, cutting spending on travel, for building renovations, purchase of cars and other items. He said he would urge Parliament, the judiciary, and county governments to impose similar measures. After Ruto spoke, Deputy President Rigathi Gachagua said he sympathizes with the president but blames the National Intelligence Service head, Nurdin Haji, for failing to inform Ruto about how unpopular the finance bill was. Reporter Ruben Chama has been covering the aftermath of yesterday's protests. He spoke with me earlier today about what he has been seeing.
Yes, I'm actually in Nairobi right now at the Kenyan capital, a day after we witnessed the violent protests, not only in Nairobi, but in many parts of the country. The city is a little bit calm, of course, a bit of tense. You can feel a bit of some tense. There is heavy security around, especially around the parliament buildings and also the areas that were targeted by the protesters.
And Ruben,
Kenya's Red Cross said some of its vehicles were attacked and its staff and volunteers were injured during the protests yesterday. Talk to us about the injuries and damage.
As of today, the number of casualties that have already been confirmed, at least 8 people have been reported dead. The number might also go up, and scores of people were wounded. Indeed, it's difficult to really say how many so far have been injured. In one of the major hospitals here, this afternoon, the medics, when they were talking to the press, they said they have already received up to 163 persons who have been injured, who are wounded from the protest. And we definitely, there will be other numbers in many parts of the country. So the damage was quite significant. We've also seen the report of some businesses having been vandalized, supermarkets having been targeted. So up to now, I think the authorities are still trying to quantify the exact number or the exact figure for the damage caused. But at the same time, I should say that we've seen many families streaming to the hospitals, asking people to donate blood, because some of the victims who are injured or wounded yesterday, the doctors have said that they require a blood transfusion. So there is a lot of activities going on right now as we see hospitals being filled by the relatives of those young people, some of whom were taking part in the demonstration.
And Ruben, there are reports that Kenya's military was deployed to support the country's police services. Can you expand on that?
Yes, the Kenya Defense Forces have also been deployed to support the police in response to what the government terms a security emergency caused by the ongoing protests. However, the opposition leaders and also some political pundits have questioned the decision to deploy the military, saying it was a rash decision, and some have also termed this as unconstitutional.
The internet monitoring site NetBlocks reported a major disruption to connectivity.
Right now, I can say the internet seems to be back to normal, although the men of the service providers had issued a statement saying that they were having some challenges with the connections. Otherwise, today, the internet seems to be working well.
That was journalist Ruben Chama talking to me from Nairobi. As you heard, things are calmer in Kenya today after demonstrators swept the country yesterday. Reporter James Shimanyula was on the streets today in central Nairobi talking to people about what happened yesterday. Here are some of their comments. Businessman Willie Njuru supports the protesters.
What happened yesterday was unprecedented. What happened yesterday is just a tip in the iceberg of what need to be done. We are agitating for the oppressive finance bill. So it is important for the government to listen to us, because it is us who are paying tax. It is us who are feeling the pinch of what is happening to us.
Evans Lagat, another businessman, also opposed the finance bill.
As you see, the country is becoming calm now. Things are cool. We are now cool a bit. I want the government to drop the finance bill.
Kiosk owner Mary Njoroge was unhappy with the protesters and the government.
They vandalized everything. Ruto should go.
For all the latest on events in Kenya, please check out voaafrica.com or find us on your favorite social media platform. A senior medical officer told VOA that yesterday at his hospital, 3 patients died from injuries in Tuesday's mass protests. For the first time since independence more than 60 years ago, a section of Kenya's parliament was burned by protesters. Dozens, as reported, shops were also looted and extensively damaged. Police fired bullets and tear gas at the protesters, leading to at least 20 deaths and scores of injuries. Reporter James Shimanyula had an exclusive interview with Dr. Benjamin Wabawiri, Director of Surgical Services at Kenyatta National Hospital, the largest in Kenya. about the casualties his team saw. They started by talking about the injuries the staff saw.
Summarize for us, what caused most of the injuries to patients?
Most of the injuries were actually blunt force. Canisters is one of them, but things like clubs, batons can also cause similar injuries. By far, those were the most common.
How many patients give us a breakdown of emergency cases, mild cases?
Of all the cases we received, 55 needed surgery. About 72 were just soft tissue that needed treatment and were released, and we have another 30 or so who are just on treatment for non-surgical but soft tissue injuries that are non-surgical but requiring admission in the hospital.
In your experience, since you started working at Kenyatta, have you ever seen what you have seen so far?
For this type of injuries, the last time we saw a significant avalanche of patients of this nature was post-election violence in 2007-2008. But we have also seen a similar large number of patients, particularly after burn injuries. But for this type, yeah, this was a huge number in a long while.
How many casualties, how many people have died? How many are in very critical condition?
Two bodies were brought in dead. We lost one patient who was undergoing treatment. Of the ones remaining, there are three patients, one of them with abdominal gunshot and two thoracic or chest injuries who are critical, but the rest of the patients who needed surgery sustained limb injuries.
That was Dr. Benjamin Wawiri, Director of Surgical Service at Kenyatta National Hospital, the largest in Kenya, speaking with reporter James Shimanyula. World Health Organization member states are negotiating an agreement to strengthen pandemic prevention, preparedness, and response, citing the millions of lives lost during the COVID-19 outbreak. Africa, in particular, struggled to access vaccines that were produced in developed nations. Darren Taylor reports.
The WHO says the accord is driven by the need to ensure communities, governments, and all sectors of society are better prepared and protected when the next global pandemic strikes. It says its 194 member states are committed to preventing a repetition of the suffering from COVID-19, mostly in 2020 to 2022. Advocate Fatima Hassan of the African Health Justice Initiative says the WHO pandemic accord must ensure that the response to deadly disease outbreaks isn't controlled by pharmaceutical companies.
Rich nations in particular permit these companies to hoard the vaccine knowledge through excessive protections of intellectual property claims in a deadly policy choice. It relied on pharmaceutical companies' cooperation and volunteerism, which has not materialized. And by doing so, it allowed them to exercise market monopolies for profit motives and geopolitical considerations.
Veteran South African health official Dr. Precious Matsoso is co-chairing the intergovernmental team set up to draft the WHO pandemic convention. She says the agreement should ensure that poorer nations get enough vaccines.
This time around, even if the well-established economies decide to produce for their own citizens, they should at least do one thing and one thing only: allow for technology transfer that will enable diversified production. Because in that case, in the African region, we can then have production of supplies that can be distributed across the whole region.
Matsoso says developed countries should commit to helping African companies produce vaccines from scratch. She welcomes the launch last week in Paris of the African Vaccine Manufacturing Accelerator. It's an initiative aimed at boosting vaccine production on the continent. Some European countries, the United States, and others have pledged to contribute more than $1 billion towards scaling up capacity to make vaccines. Matsoso tells VOA one proposed clause in the WHO pandemic agreement concerns domestic financing and that countries should establish funds according to their means to deal with the next outbreak.
Countries can't just wait for handouts. You know, they have also a responsibility towards their own populations, and they have to ensure that they make wise investments. They can put money where it matters most to ensure prevention as well as preparedness. Countries have to prepare. They shouldn't prepare when we're already in crisis times. During peace times, this is where these investments should be made.
Matsoso is encouraged that the first article to be approved under the accord concerns health workers during a pandemic.
The health workers were at the front line of the pandemic. They will always be. They are the first port of call when we're hit with outbreaks. And it is for that reason that they should be the first to get protection, personal protection equipment. If there are vaccinations, they must be the first to be vaccinated. They must be the first to be diagnosed so that they must be able to protect others.
Mats also expects the final draft of the Global Pandemic Accord to be completed by the end of 2024 or in early 2025. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Top military officials and police chiefs from the Central African Republic and neighboring Cameroon are meeting on their shared security situation. Both countries are seeing deadly border attacks by rebels and armed gangs. Moki Edwin Kindeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Officials from Cameroon and neighboring Central African Republic meeting in the CAR capital Bangui say waves of insecurity and economic hardship are making it impossible for refugees and displaced persons to return to their communities. The officials say armed gangs and rebels operating on both sides of the border steal cattle and food for survival and regularly abduct civilians for ransom. Paul Atanganji is Cameroon's territorial administration minister and leader of the Cameroon delegation to the Bangui meeting.
Le chef d'État a prescrit la vigilance de tous les instants. Nous avons constaté que
says top military officials and police chiefs are meeting in Bangui to map out how to stop rebels and armed gangs from infiltrating and causing harm to civilians on both sides of the border. He says security is fragile in the area because rebels sell illicit weapons and drugs to armed gangs and civilians. Nji said before the Bangui meeting, President Paul Biya ordered Cameroon border troops and officials to control commercial motorcycle riders and vehicles suspected to be used by rebels and armed gangs to transport ammunition. Cameroon and the Central African Republic share a mostly porous border that is about 900 kilometers long. Officials of the two countries say rebels disguised as cattle ranchers smuggle weapons on horses and donkeys. CAR estimates at least 10,000 children are fighters in CAR armed groups and many cross into neighboring states, including Cameroon and Chad, to commit crimes. Bruno Yapande is the CAR Territorial Administration Minister.
Il y a des doléances que nous avons reçues, des plaintes qui parviennent de partout, et nous allons étudier tout ça.
Yapande says President Faustin Archange Kanji Touadéra of CAR, who is dealing with complaints of increasing rebel attacks and atrocities, wants government troops to work with the Cameroon military to increase border surveillance and restore peace in the fragile region. He says Touadéra has ordered CAR officials to also meet with the Sudan, South Sudan, DRC, the Republic of Congo and Chad which also share boundaries with CAR, to stop rebels from operating and hiding on both sides of the border.
Tous les autres pays de l'Afrique centrale, surtout les pays frontaliers de la République centrafricaine.
Yapande spoke on CAR state television Wednesday. Cameroon and the CAR say they are finalizing plans with the African Union and the United Nations to demarcate their border. The countries have competing claims to some areas. CAR descended into violence in 2013 when predominantly Muslim Seleka rebels seized power and forced then-President François Bozizé from office. A Christian-dominated militia called the Anti-Balaka fought back with both the Seleka and Anti-Balaka accused of killing civilians. In 2014, the United Nations authorized deployment of a multidimensional United Nations peacekeeping mission to CAR to protect civilians and reduce the growing humanitarian, human rights and political crisis. The UN says the fighting has killed thousands and displaced over a million people, or one-fifth of the CAR population. More than 300,000 people displaced from CAR are in Cameroon. Cameroon has about 1,000 troops in CAR operating under the UN. The two countries say only joint efforts can stop or reduce the border violence. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
The first debate of the 2024 U.S. presidential election takes place on Thursday, but it isn't the first time the candidates have faced off. VOA senior Washington correspondent Carolyn Presutti looks back to 2020 for some clues about what we will see and hear in the debate between President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump.
When these two last met,
let people know you're a senator. I'm not going to answer the question.
Why
because,
you answer that
because
question?
The question is, the question is,
one was first-term President Donald Trump.
I've done more in 47 months. I've done more than you've done in 47 years, Joe.
The other long-term politician, Joe Biden.
People out there need help.
The 90-minute matchup was filled with chaos and interruptions.
You shut up, man. Listen, who is on your list, Joe?
This
Who's
is
on your
so
right.
Gentlemen,
is,
I think
this
we've
is
ended
so
this
one. He's going to pack the court.
VOA asked voters what they remembered about that debate.
Oh, gosh, that was a while ago.
I remember that Trump was, you know, a superior debater.
Trump was obviously sort of employing these, like, very childish tricks, interrupting him constantly, and Biden sort of wasn't really having any of it.
This same political theater is expected Thursday.
Sir?
With $1 billion, if you
that
get rid
is
of
absolutely you know what, you're, wait, not.
Stop.
But could be tempered because of new rules. In this debate, a candidate's microphone will be muted when it's not his turn to speak. Biden voter Chet Edelman likes the idea.
Yeah, I mean, I wish it didn't have to come down to that, but I mean, given the last debate, I think that's a good policy or protocol.
One of the more memorable lines in this 2020 debate came when then-President Trump was asked to condemn white supremacists. Analysts say he issued an alert.
Proud Boys, stand back and stand by.
Both men were asked if they would accept the election results that year.
If it's a fair election, I am 100% on board. But if I see tens of thousands of ballots being manipulated, I can't go along with that.
I will accept it, and he will too. You know why? Because once the winner is declared after all the ballots are counted, all the votes are counted, that'll be the end of it.
When Trump lost the election, his backers stormed the U.S. Capitol on January 6th in an attempt to overturn the result. Analysts predict this debate won't change the minds of voters who have already decided. Via Zoom, Peter Loge is the director of the School of Media and Public Affairs at the George Washington University.
Supporters of Joe Biden are going to dismiss his slips of tongue or his misstatements, because that's kind of who Joe Biden is, and he's kind of always been that way. Trump's supporters similarly are going to say, yeah, well, he's just Trump. He's speaking off the cuff. Take him seriously, not literally.
Ben Cox, an undecided voter, knows what he wants to see on Thursday.
A lot more love, I think, to bring us together.
A second debate between the presidential candidates is scheduled for September. but that could depend on how things go on Thursday. Carolyn Presutti,